Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host. Hope wherever you are in the world, you are well. Thank you for tuning in. I am recording this Saturday morning here in Melbourne, Australia. The Premier League is back and Arsenal face Manchester United at Old Trafford. It's a Monday morning kickoff time here in Australia. Here we go again. It's 1:30 a.m. for us. It's just, I've had a few months off, a few months to prepare. And here we go again, dealing with the time zones. But we'll get into all of that today. The Premier League actually kicked off overnight. I haven't seen any of the match. I just know the result, Liverpool 4-2 over Bournemouth. Again, I haven't seen any highlights. I just get the sense that this is just going to be one of those things that we're going to see with Liverpool. It's going to be high scoring, obviously, with the amount invested into their attack and how much they've powered up. There are still some gaps through their midfield and through their squad, as we know of. So they are still vulnerable. It's just a matter of over the course of the season, how much can they overcompensate with their goals, with their attack, in terms of what they concede. But you know what? It is what it is, that they overcame it last season. They're the reigning champions, and they're looking strong again to go again this season. And fair enough. From an Arsenal point of view, we got to focus on what we can do, and are we ready? Are we as prepared as possible? And aside from just that one last dream/luxury style signing, I think we all know what we're referring to. Someone like an Eze or an out and out a pure genuine left winger who that can really upgrade on the options we have at the moment. I think that would be like the cherry on top in terms of Arsenal's business. I don't think I'm saying anything that no one is aware of or hasn't been aware of in terms of the last couple of weeks of the Arsenal sentiment. So it's just one of those things, though, that like, are we actually going to be able to do that or not? Well, much depends on what we do now in terms of outgoings. I think ever since the Gyökeres transaction was finalized, we're talking about a week and a half or so ago, we understand the messaging and the narrative coming out of the club is that, look, we're open for business. We are still actively looking in the market, and however, there's a focus a focus needs to be placed now on securing some outgoings and some sales, because we do have a big squad. I mean, I looked at the numbers just the other day when the official website published their squad numbers, and as they usually do, the whole media day event that happens around this time of every season. Arsenal have a big squad. You're right. I know it doesn't feel that way sometimes, does it? It just feels like we're one option short. However, when you look at the pure numbers, we have too many. In fact, one of the topics I was going to discuss in this recording, and we may as well get into it now, actually, is in terms of the squad that's travelling to Old Trafford this Monday morning, Australian time. Who misses out? I mean, there's only so many substitutes you can name on the bench in your matchday squad. So who's going to miss out? I mean, there's some decisions to make for Arteta. And thank you, by the way, for putting up with my voice. I'm still trying to shake off this nagging cough, so apologies in advance if you're struggling on the audio. Going back to my point about the matchday squad, so even accounting for, in terms of Arsenal's current squad, even accounting for the likes of Carl Hein, Reece Nelson, Sambi Lokonga, Fabio Vieira, I think we all know what we're referring to here, that this is a group of players who we know that we need to, one by one, secure the futures for. I'm certainly hoping it's permanent sales, because so often Arsenal get to a point in the window and we're struggling to offload players, and we seek loans with options and whatnot, just to try and get their wages off the books for a year, and hope that A, they have an excellent season to drive their value up. An excellent season on loan can, you know, attract a lot of market interest across Europe and across England. Sadly, unfortunately, just for various reasons, those things have not really been happening. And then we get to the start of the summer, and those loan spells have ceased, and the players return to the club, and we sort of start that whole process again. So Arsenal's business, I mean, this is such a critical point here, and it's hamstrung Arsenal for so many years. When we often look back and think that, damn, we are one player short, or we get to a point in the season where it's March, April, May, we're playing three times a week, we're away to Bayern Munich midweek in a critical Champions League fixture, we've got Aston Villa on the weekend at home, in sandwich between these matches, and we're looking for squad depth, and we're looking for players to come off the bench and really make that impact off the bench, but we haven't been able to power up. A significant factor is that we haven't been able to offset our significant spending with some real genuine sales. I know last year we did excellent. Like last year's a bit of an aberration, because even in terms of incomings, we saw that we really had to pare back our amount of spending from the previous few seasons. So last year we did great with the sales of like the likes of Nketiah, Ramsdale, Smith Rowe. So that was excellent. However, prior to that, when we've really been looking to power up, And it's coming into impact as well now, that this current summer, is that we can't seem to get top value for players, and there's a host of reasons for it, right? It's everything from Arsenal just not being able to, not being able to sell players at their peak value. We've also been guilty of tanking players' value that all of a sudden they seem to be part of the first team squad, part of Arteta's plans and vision, but then he can just go cold on them, just sort of seemingly out of nowhere, and they're cast off, and then other clubs it's very publicly made aware that, oh, okay, well, this is a player who we'll just wait this out now, we'll just see this through, because maybe Arsenal will pay them out. Maybe Arsenal will cancel their contracts, or we can get them on a cut price deal. So there's a whole host of reasons that go into it. It's not just one key factor, but across the board, Arsenal just do need to improve this. And as savvy an operator as Andrea Berta is, and he's been conducting some excellent business incoming, and we've also had an excellent record in recent seasons at contract extensions and renewals. That's been critical for Arsenal. We haven't really lost a key integral player elsewhere across Europe or to a rival. So Arsenal have an excellent track record there. It's just this this very important piece of business, though, in terms of the category of sales outgoings. It can make all the difference between us being able to commit that level of spending for Eze, for example. I'm using Eze as an example because he's the most commonly named player linked with Arsenal at the moment, and there's rumours that that Spurs are right into him, and I can totally understand why. I mean, there's only so long a player can wait hanging around thinking that are Arsenal going to make a move for me or not? You know, I'm sure we're in close contact with his representatives and Palace. Maybe there's a general understanding between all parties that this is going to be a late window move. But, you know, that's risky. That really is risky because players want certainty. Clubs want certainty. If Palace are preparing for Eze's departure, right, they need time to prepare for whoever's going to come in and replace him. And it's a domino effect. Whichever players and clubs they're eyeing off to reinvest that money into their squad, right, those players and clubs need to be made aware. There's only so long all this stuff can be in limbo for, is what I'm trying to say. So it remains to be seen. I don't think the club has ruled it out. I mean, Arteta would never talk about specific players. He's not going to say, oh, okay, we just need to sell a few players and maybe Trossard, for example, and we're going to buy Eze. It doesn't work that way. But reading between the lines, right now we are just in a state of limbo because we need to secure some outgoings. And in the last week and a half, that there hasn't really been much traction, has there? So let's see what happens now. So I'll get back to the match at Old Trafford that's upcoming. So Arteta's had his press conference and is, you know, understandably in a very upbeat mood, very positive. You know, he says all the right things and he transmits all the right energy to use a common word that Arteta uses, transmits. So I haven't watched it in full. I'm about three quarters of the way through it, but the vibe is pretty consistent. He's quite positive, quite bullish as well in a few comments. I think I just need to address this. I'll address this quickly. The whole Martin Odegaard thing that came about through Tony Adams's comments, that supposedly that event happened about a week and a half ago, but for whatever reason, the clips only emerged just in recent days from it. Look, I just wish, you know, there's enough discourse around Arsenal. I mean, you don't have to look very far. This is coming from someone who, even though I'm not actively online as some are, and I've got the benefit of distance, I'm a huge fan all the way the other side of the world, right? So every time I put on the radio or something, I'm not bombarded with football and the talk sports style discourse that's very much engagement driven. You know, you see it all throughout Twitter, all online. Anything that drives engagement is something that drives revenue, of course. So Arsenal are very, what's the word I'm looking for? Arsenal is an easy target because they know people will bite. I mean, Arsenal obviously have a huge global fan base. So we haven't quite won anything yet. So there is, you know, there are a few little cheap shots that they can just keep launching into Arsenal, and it'll become a story. It'll become a headline, and they'll be able to drive a number of narratives and clicks for the next couple of days. And it just keeps things ticking over. So there's enough of that already, is what I'm trying to say. There's so much of that. Even Arsenal, without even just trying too hard. I mean, Arteta, the way Arteta is viewed and perceived across the industry, just by him just saying or doing just, you know, pretty standard managerial things. So there's enough fuel already. It's disappointing in this instance that you know, like, why would Adam say such a thing? Look, I know why he would say it, because he is from that old school, that type of football where a captain needs to fit a certain profile or a certain demographic. As we've known since, and we've grown and learned and evolved, that leadership can look in many, many different shapes and forms, right? There's no absolute. It's not as one-dimensional as it sometimes used to be. So it was disappointing in that respect that it just like there's that one specific comment. I mean, I understand the points he was trying to make on the clip that I saw. However, that one specific comment is all that's needed to drive the whole hassle now, and this whole subplot that's unfortunately emerged. When he made that comment about Arsenal will never win anything with Odegaard as captain, I mean, you just didn't need to say that. You don't need to, because of course it's going to become a story, especially because it comes from a club legend who's still very close to the club, and you know he's attended a number of events and he's still an ambassador and he always goes into bat for Arsenal and his punditry work and stuff. And it's just, you know, like, why would you say that? And of course it was going to be asked of Arteta, and of course he needed to respond, and his response was very emphatic. I don't know how true it is that there was an actual vote just in the last couple of days about within the club to vote for their captain, and that it was unanimous. But I think the point he was trying to make more so was just about, it's not even a discussion. It's not even a thing. He's knocked it on its head, and hopefully it's just the last time we see this, because there's enough discussion around Odegaard anyway. He had a very difficult season last season, and if you listen to my recordings before, hopefully you've heard me say this as well before, that I just don't think he was fit. I think he was struggling a lot with pain and injury, and that's why you know, we saw things he was playing with a lighter body weight quite often. That's to manage pain in the background in between matches, and he was overplayed too. Was there something we could have done differently to maybe pulling him out of the firing line a little bit? As difficult as that was at that time, because we had so many injuries and we needed him, we needed all of our senior members to play as much as they could. I do still think that played a part as well, you know. So he's looking much more like his usual self. That ball striking his back, he doesn't need anyone else to tell him that it's a big season for him. It's a big season for everyone, right? That there's a hunger in the squad, there's a fire in the belly, and I think the players know that they want to show it, they want to prove it now. We've been so close. Three consecutive second place finishes. I don't think that satisfies anyone within the club. I don't think it satisfies their appetite. And that starts with the manager. I mean, no one wants to win more than him. So this sort of discussion, this sort of discourse, it's not very helpful. And I've already just realized now I've probably spoken about it more than it actually needs to be. So I'll wrap that one up. You just got to get behind them. I just think we need the players to feel supported, just to go out there and just do their thing, because the temperature is high enough. The pressure cooker that Arsenal operate in under, it's high enough as it is. So let's not unnecessarily add to that. So elsewhere in his press conference, he spoke very highly about Gyökeres, of course. There's going to be a whole, I mean, we know how this is going to go, right? Gyökeres versus Sesko, opening day. We just know the headlines. I know Sesko is going to score, right? It's written in the stars, right? Of course it is. Of course he's going to score. I just hope that we acquit ourselves well, and we see a comprehensive performance just like we saw against Athletic Club in the last friendly last weekend. And I'm very confident if we see that version of Arsenal, right, then we're going to get the 3 points. I feel that way, that what I saw against Athletic Club, now that Arsenal finally have a clean bill of health, well, touch wood, I don't want to jinx anything, but aside from Trossard who's a doubt, Arteta said that there's a training session still to be happened, and if he comes through that, he may be fit. But that's very classic Arteta speak. He might know already inside that Trossard won't feature, but he's not going to say it. He gives nothing away. Like, you can't read too much into his actual comments, right? So I'd be surprised if Trossard features in this match. I don't think he's featured at all since the Asian tour. Is that right? I think when his niggle happened, I think it was. But anyway, with the options already on the table to select from, I think Martinelli will start on the left. And we've got Madueke as well, of course, who's shown some, you know, real glimpses. He had something different, especially on the left, a left footer playing from there. It gives us that air of unpredictability, right? And I think this is the type of thing that Arteta is going to lean into. So we might be able to make do whilst Trossard reintegrates. And again,
There's actually a genuine question mark about Trossard's future at Arsenal. There's some reported interest from Turkey and apparently some other Premier League clubs. I don't think any specific clubs have been named, but this is the type of thing Arsenal need to get better at. If there's a player of value who's attracting interest and it suits them and it suits the club and all the figures line up, then we need to capitalize when the time is there. And if we can look to reinvest that money on someone like an Eze or someone else, I think this is the type of key piece of business that great clubs do. They refresh and renew at the right times and reinvest. And so, it just remains to be seen what happens with Trossard overall. Okay, I'm going to have a crack now here at a predicted 11 that we'll see start against Manchester United. I think that the key decisions to be made are probably at left back, at right back, and of course, who starts at centre forward. So I think based on pre-season overall, I do think that Timber is just a little bit short in his sort of timeline, his recovery. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see White start at right back. Of course, I'm stating the obvious here, but Gabriel and Saliba as centre halves, Raya as goalkeeper. At left back is interesting. I do think that Calafiori has probably had a better pre-season than Myles Lewis-Skelly, who just hasn't quite looked his usual self, and that's okay. He's so young. He's come off an incredible season last year, right? So players, you know, that they reintegrate in their own timeline as well. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Calafiori start at left back, and you know, it gives us just with that back five. Look at the options it gives us off the bench already. You can bring on Timber if you need to. On either side, to be honest. But later in the match, we might need some impact from Lewis-Skelly driving through midfield, right? So it already just seems so much better in terms of our bench strength, right? Just by having these nice dilemmas, these nice selection dilemmas to choose from. So midfield, Zubimendi, Arteta said that he's fit, he's available. So I don't see any reason to think that he won't start this, unless he's injured, of course. But there's a rumor going around the other day that he was absent from some type of photography, but I don't know if that's been debunked as yet or not. So I'm saying Zubimendi starts. Of course, you got Odegaard, Rice, Martinelli will start at left wing, I think, with impact from Madueke in the second half. I do think you need to start Gyökeres for this, and I'm stating the obvious, of course, who's at right wing. We all know it. My favourite player, Bukayo Saka, who I think is ready for an enormous season, by the way. I think he's got a point to prove. He definitely comes across as someone who's got unfinished business. So I think that's a key theme across the Arsenal squad, by the way, unfinished business, and represented no better than Bukayo Saka. So I think you start Gyökeres with this. You kind of just have to. A signing of that magnitude, it's a symbolic position as well. That it's one of those positions that you want your key signings starting and playing. Again, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see Havertz start, but I'm leaning towards Gyökeres, and just even mentioning Kai Havertz as well. And I've already mentioned Madueke along with Timber and Lewis-Skelly. I mean, already just look at our bench strength. I mean, it's just so pleasing to be able to have these options now. And yes, I know I'm referring to a specific point in time, opening match day, and anything can happen within a few weeks with some bad luck like last season that we suffered. Very quickly that complexion can change and we're back to last season when it didn't really take much to have a bench, you know, full of left backs and youth players, right? And encapsulated by the squads that we took to that we somehow managed to make a Champions League semi-final. And we ran PSG right down to the wire. Incredible, really, in looking when you look at the two benches at the time. I think in the first leg, Arsenal's first substitution was Ben White coming on the 81st or 82nd minute. That was our first sub. We brought on a fullback when, at the time, PSG could bring on Ramos, who himself is about a 90-100 million euro signing. I mean, it tells a story in and of itself. So back to this match, already just having bench strength, and I haven't even mentioned the likes of Mikel Merino, Norgard, Kiwior, Mosquera, who's had an excellent few appearances as well. So it's just a very fit, healthy, strong-looking Arsenal squad. Again, I'm touching wood because it's a snapshot in time. That could change very quickly, but if this is the type of squad and the mentality that we're bringing in, I think it bodes very, very, very well for Arsenal. I still do believe that we're one signing short because fast forward, I mean, we're only in August, of course, but fast forward when a few months or when the games come in, think it fast, and we're juggling Champions League commitments with cup matches and Premier League fixtures, midweek, weekends, especially when you get to January. January was just a really difficult month for Arsenal last season. The season started to spiral out of control then, didn't it? We got suffered those cluster injuries as well. So we're going to need to lean into our squad, lean into these players. And I understand that's still a question mark that hovers over Arteta. I mean, despite all of the spending, all the investment, all the strengthening of Arsenal's options and our bench strength and our squad strength, there's still that question mark. Will Arteta actually do it? And I wish I could tell you here with confidence that he will, but over the course of time, we will find out. And I'm certainly hoping now, with the benefit of experience now and the learnings from the last few seasons, especially last year, I get the sense that the club are aware now internally that there were some things we could have and should have done differently that that perhaps could have mitigated or prevented or limited the extent of injuries and the severity of them too. Because when we suffered a hamstring injury, it wasn't just a little niggle that keeps someone out for, you know, a week or two. These injuries required surgery. These were corrective surgery. These were major significant injuries that wiped players out for 4 or 5 months or even the season. So I think Arsenal were culpable in that regard, and certainly Arteta as well needs to look internally to say, you know, were there different decisions he could have made with pushing players with their load, and could he have made some different selection decisions at the time that have impacted the injury? So I just think now, zooming out, looking at Arsenal's squad, we're ready. We're really ready and primed. I wish the match was on right now, to be honest. I'm ready to go. I'm feeling quite positive and strong about this. And I just hope we go out there and we just smack them, because Manchester United, oh my God, don't even get me started right now. The late 90s, early 2000s era, Ferguson versus Wenger, there was nothing else quite like it. It was box office. And I didn't quite appreciate it at the time, because it was just the thing at the time. And who would have known that after 2004 that was the last title that Arsenal have enjoyed so far. And even as United have really have not been the same, obviously, since Ferguson left a little over a decade ago. Despite their indifferent form, right, that they still cause Arsenal problems somehow. Old Trafford is such a difficult place to go to and win. It's just been one of those things that we just need to go there and just do it. And in a few weeks' time as well, we'll have the opportunity at Anfield to correct some things there as well, right? But we'll talk about that at a different time. Right here, right now, we start at Old Trafford. Let's go out there and make a statement, and let's put in that comprehensive performance and silence some doubters and bring home a comfortable 3 points. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Okay, I'm going to wrap this one up there. Thank you so much for listening. Before I go, if you could please kindly like and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube, or a podcast review on your audio platform, Spotify or Apple Podcasts, that will be most welcome, please. Thank you so much for that. I'd greatly appreciate it. And any comments or feedback, please do send them through. I'm happy to answer any questions you may or may not have. And I'll be back on, hopefully, to talk about a resounding Arsenal victory at Old Trafford in a few days' time. I will record soon after the match finishes with some post-match comments, and I will speak to you all then. Until then, look after yourselves, stay safe, stay well, and please be kind as well. I always end on this note as well. Please be mindful of what you consume, be kind to each other, check in with your loved ones, and come on, Arsenal.